RAC's Postdoc Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. The position you hold on the socioeconomic ladder has an enormous influence on your health and life expectancy. It's what Professor Sir Michael Marmot calls the social gradient in health. Those who are richer than us, he says, can expect to live longer on average, while we in the middle outlive the poorest. Sir Michael is Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health at University College London. Well known for many years as a leading researcher on health inequality, he was invited to speak at the 87th Annual Scientific Congress in Sydney. Sir Michael, what provoked your interest in this area of research?
I first got interested as a junior doctor, seeing patients coming into accident and emergency rooms, and it seemed to me crystal clear that their health problems were related to the conditions in which they lived and worked. And we were trying to deal with the health problems, but not trying to deal with their conditions of life. And because I reflected on that, but I didn't quite know how I was going to deal with it, when somebody said, you know, there is a branch of medical research called epidemiology, and I've never heard of it, and certainly never heard of social epidemiology, but it actually deals with studying the conditions in which people live and work and their health. So I went off to the University of California, Berkeley, and did a PhD in epidemiology.
You ask us to go beyond our typical thinking about the causes of ill health, such as smoking, drinking, poor diet and exercise, to understand the causes of the causes. What do you mean by that, and where do the problems start?
Well, when I started working in Britain, I got involved in the so-called Whitehall study of British civil servants. And what we found in people who were all employed in the civil service, all public servants, and it excludes both the richest, no bankers or hedge fund managers, and the poorest, no unemployed, they're all employed. And yet what we found was what I call the social gradient. The lower the grade of employment, the higher the mortality. Some of that could be explained. For example, the lower people were in the hierarchy, the more likely they were to smoke. So smoking is a cause of premature mortality. The question is, why is smoking distributed in society following the social gradient? The lower the status, the higher the smoking. We need to look at the cause of smoking. So smoking is a cause. Let's look at the causes of the causes. And when we looked further at the Whitehall study, if we looked at smoking, plasma cholesterol, blood pressure, overweight, physical activity patterns, we could explain about one-third of the social gradient in cardiovascular mortality, slightly less for all-cause mortality. So part of it, a third's a lot. So that means addressing the causes of those causes that I've just elaborated, but also asking what else is going on here that's causing the gradient in mortality.
So unequal access to healthcare is not a major cause of inequality in health?
Well, again, think about Whitehall. Think about the British civil servants. We have a National Health Service. In theory, and largely in practice, it guarantees universal access, free at the point of use. The Commonwealth Fund looked at health systems in 11 countries and found that the UK National Health Service had the most, highest equity of access to healthcare, that low income was not a barrier to access to healthcare in the NHS. And indeed, in our Whitehall study, we looked at, for example, procedures for heart disease. They were more common. Investigation and surgery for heart disease were more common at the bottom of the hierarchy, but that's because heart disease was more common. And the extra was about proportionate. The extra access to services was about proportionate to the extra disease. So in other words, in Britain at least, the social gradient in health is not primarily due to a social gradient in access to healthcare.
Well, in terms of life expectancy, most people in the middle, neither very rich nor poor, may believe they're as well off as those at the top, but you emphasise the gradient impact on health. What does that mean?
I described the Whitehall study of British civil servants, but in fact, wherever we look in the world, we've done this in Taiwan, we've done it in Brazil, we've done it in Australia, in the United States, in most European countries. What we find that, let's take education, for example, the more years of education, the better the health. People with a university education have slightly shorter life expectancy than those with a PhD. Those who complete university education have slightly better health than those who graduate from high school but don't complete university, all the way from top to bottom. So people who may actually have a university degree but are not at the top of the hierarchy have worse health than those at the top. And this is what I mean by the social gradient. It runs all the way from top to bottom. And that means that when we think about health inequalities, we can't think only about poverty. It is true that the poor have poor health, but it doesn't mean that the poor have poor health and everybody else is fine. It's graded. The lower the education, the lower the income, the worse the occupational status, the worse the health. And that changes both the scientific question, how come? Because it's relatively easy to think why poverty is bad for health, but it changes the scientific question, why are people in the middle worse off in terms of health than people at the top? And that's not access to healthcare. It also changes the public health question. If we want to reduce inequalities in health, we have to reduce poverty, yes, but we actually have to deal with inequalities, with the whole gradient. And that means improving things for everybody below the very top.
Well, you've addressed several big issues during your keynote lectures to RACS just now, from reflecting on what matters in the developing world to the global health consequences of chronic disease in Indigenous communities. Some huge topics there. What have been your key messages to RACS, both here and in New Zealand?
The two key messages of my global commission, the WHO Commission on Social Determinants of Health, was firstly, there is a huge gap in life expectancy and health between countries and huge inequalities within countries, and that we know enough to take the action to close those gaps. We called the WHO Commission on Social Determinants of Health report, Closing the Gap in a Generation. And the second message was that dealing with this is a matter of social justice. We said social injustice is killing on a grand scale. And that reflects the judgment that we do know enough to make a big difference to these health inequalities between and within countries. And I spelled out some of what that knowledge is about. For example, I said this morning that education of women is probably the single most effective intervention for reducing infant and child mortality. And we can look at the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, and take action on improving those conditions, which will result in better health and narrower health inequalities.
Does it still shock you that the world's richest nations have some of the biggest inequities with grim health outcomes and associated crime rates?
It upsets me. It challenges me. I guess I'm not shocked anymore because I've been looking at this for a long time. But before I came to Sydney, I went to Alice Springs. You know well the gap in health between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. If you look at the United Nations Development Programme report, they have so-called human development indicators, and I think Australia ranks second in the world, just after Norway, on human development. The human development indicators take into account literacy, income, and health, life expectancy. And Australia ranks second. if Australian Aborigines and Torres Strait Islanders were treated as a separate country, they would rank 115th. That is really shocking. And it's not straightforward to know how to deal with it, but it's pretty clear the explanations are in the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age. And I think that we do know a great deal scientifically about how to deal with the problem. The question is doing it. If I come back to the UK, you may have read in your newspapers about the fire in Grenfell Tower. Grenfell Tower was a local authority high-rise block, caught fire. Many people died, entirely preventable. I looked at the time of the Grenfell fire. It's in the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea. And the Royal Borough, in the south of the borough, there's ambassadorial residences, literally ambassadors live there. And in the north, they have buildings like Grenfell Tower. At the time of the fire, the life expectancy gap for men within Kensington and Chelsea was 14 years. The people living in the north of the borough near Grenfell had 14 years shorter life expectancy than people living in the south. That's wrong. It shouldn't be like that.
The link between health and the nature of society itself is a massive consideration. Are you saying that we need to radically reform wealth distribution to improve health outcomes for all?
In my English review of health inequalities, which I was commissioned to do by the British government after I did the WHO commission, I had six domains of recommendations. And I think they apply to Australia and to other countries. The six were first, early child development, give every child the best start in life. The second was education and lifelong learning. The third was employment and working conditions. The fourth was everyone should have at least the minimum income necessary for a healthy life. The fifth was healthy and sustainable places in which to live and work. And the sixth was addressing prevention from the perspective of the causes of the causes, as we were discussing before. Now, that's not only about wealth redistribution. I think if we address those six domains that I've just elaborated, we can make an enormous difference. So it is related to social and economic inequalities, but it's not only wealth redistribution.
What responses do you typically receive from politicians, economists, bureaucrats as you spread your message far and wide? Are people in positions of power listening?
I felt when I started doing this work that no one was listening. Not the scientists, not the public health people, not the politicians. I didn't think anyone was listening. I don't feel that now. I can see people listening all over. Now, it's patchy, but for example, in Britain, I was commissioned by the government to do my review of health inequalities, the Marmot Review. Now, I was commissioned when Gordon Brown was Labour Prime Minister, but when the Conservatives came into power in the Conservative-led coalition government, they issued a public health white paper and said this is the government's response to the Marmot Review and we will not solve the problem of health inequalities through the healthcare system alone, but we have to take action on the social determinants of health. Now, they haven't done so much at national level. They've been rather preoccupied with Brexit and goodness knows what. But there's been a great deal of action at local level. The city of Coventry declared itself a Marmot city. The mayor of Manchester invited me up because he wants Marmot principles to underpin what he does for the development of Manchester. In Sweden, I'm told that there are something like 10 Marmot reviews happening in different cities and regions of Sweden. And then they launched a national commission to look at the social determinants of health and health inequalities in Sweden. So many countries are listening and are taking it seriously. And many medical organizations are listening and taking it seriously. the fact that I'm talking to the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons, I think, is very interesting. The surgeons had invited me, the obstetricians and gynecologists, the psychiatrists, the paediatricians, internal medicine, thoracic medicine, the local government association, people involved in urban planning, people involved in crime and civil unrest. I went through my diary for a few months and looked at the variety of people and organizations that had invited me to come and talk in different countries. There's a thirst for this knowledge. There's a real interest. Now, going from the interest to action is not straightforward, but the interest has got to come first, and I'm encouraged and enthused.
Are some countries doing better than others in closing the gap in health inequalities?
Indeed, some countries are doing better than others. It's easier to find examples where health inequalities are increasing than it is to find examples where health inequalities are diminishing. And that's in part because social and economic inequalities are increasing in many countries. But to give you two examples, in Brazil, there's a clear social gradient in infant mortality. The lower the income or wealth level of the family, the higher the infant mortality. That steep social gradient has got shallower, much shallower. And I think, at least in part, that's because the level of economic inequality in Brazil has gone down. Something similar has happened in Peru. If you look at under-5 mortality by mother's education, in 2000, there was a steep gradient. The less education the mother had, the higher the child mortality. In 2012, 12 years later, that gradient in absolute terms had got smaller. So I look at these figures and say, wow, it really is possible. In Bangladesh, they've done it. They've reduced the inequalities in infant and child health. In a poor country like Bangladesh, it really is possible. But you have to focus on the problem.
Well, final question, Sir Michael. Are you optimistic that one day the gap in health inequalities will be closed, or is that a long way off?
What we see is that health follows the social gradient, and all complex societies have social and economic inequalities. So there will always be social and economic inequalities in health. But the magnitude varies. We've looked across Europe, for example, the 15 European countries, and the gap in Sweden is relatively small in life expectancy at 25, compared with the gap in Estonia, in Hungary, in Romania, Bulgaria. So the former communist countries of Central and Eastern Europe have a much bigger gap than Sweden, Norway, Malta, Italy, the Mediterranean and Nordic countries. So we see this enormous variability. And as I said earlier, we can see in some countries the gap is getting wider. But if it varies across countries, and if it varies within countries, albeit in an adverse direction, then it must be possible to reduce the gap, given that we know a great deal about what to do. So I don't think we'll ever close the gap completely, but I think we can make great progress. And given my general level of optimism that the message is being heard, I think we will make progress.
Professor Sir Michael Marmot. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.